You ever had a new pet? And you go through that initial time with that animal of potty training them and trying to teach them where to go when they do certain things, where the food is. And I remember a time when Joni and I had gotten engaged, and I think we were a month or so into it, and a big tropical storm came through Richmond and flooded everything, I think. We knocked some stuff down. And we were out of school. It was so hot. Electricity was out. We were so bored. And I think we finally heard that something was open up the street. We went up there, and there was a PetSmart, and they had all these little cute little dogs out in crates. And we had been, I think we had been engaged about a month. Does that sound right, Joni? And so we thought, you know, cute little dogs. We're going to be married in a year or so. Probably be good training for us. So let's go for it. So we got a dog, and the dog lived at Joni's apartment because I was living in the dorm at the seminary at that time. And so we named him Jesse. Joy Kate pops her head up back there. Jesse was a beagle mix, and Jesse was a feisty dog. If you've ever had a beagle, you know that they have their own way about them. And so I remember as Jesse was growing in the first few months we had him, he was getting bigger. He was about maybe 4 months when we got him. And we would take him out to walk, and this was one of those dogs who took you out to walk. You didn't take him out to walk. He was gaining in strength, and he had a mind of his own, and he had that hound, you know, smell and scent, and he caught something, and he chased after you, jerked you along, and he walked you. You didn't walk him. And so, you know, we were trying to be patient and train Jesse, and when he pulled, we jerked back and, you know, kind of pull against him, and it became this battle of wills, right? The dog's will versus our will, and who was going to win? Who had more strength? Well, most of the time, I had more strength than the dog. I'm not sure as well how that went for Joni. She'll have to comment on that. But for a long time, we just battled Jesse. We just tried to, through brute force, show him where we wanted him to go and make him do what we wanted to. And eventually, Jesse didn't get trained very well. And it became, for me at least, a little bit of a nightmare to even take Jesse out the walk because, I'm going to get pulled around the whole neighborhood again. Well, at some point, I think we finally gave up, and we started trying to figure Jesse out a little bit. We started trying to use some of those techniques that the trainers would tell you to do, and use treats, and help guide him, and give him a little bit of space to go, and these different things. We had to get to know Jesse. We had to understand what made that little dog tick. We had to recognize that he was a hound dog, and that he was certain things he was going to want to chase after, and we had to guide him in an appropriate direction that worked for him. In other words, we had to stop relying on our brute force, had to start understanding that little puppy. Hold on to that story for a few moments, because I'd like to read together another story. This is a story that comes to us in the book of Mark in chapter 1, beginning in verse 21, and it's a story about a demon. And when that little dog was jerking me all over God's creation, I kind of thought to myself every once in a while, this dog has got a demon in it. And I can't seem to find a way to control it. Well, the story we come across today, Jesus finds a way to control a demon. So if you'll read along with me, Jesus and his followers went into Capernaum. Immediately, remember that word, because I told you over and over and over, we're going to hear that word immediately in Mark. Things happen suddenly all the time. Immediately on the Sabbath, Jesus entered the synagogue and started teaching. The people were amazed by his teaching, for he was teaching them with authority, not like the legal experts of that day. Suddenly, there's that word again, in the synagogue, a person with an evil spirit screamed, "What have you to do with us, Jesus of Nazareth? Have you come to destroy us? I know who you are. You are the Holy One from God." "Silence," Jesus said, speaking harshly to the demon. "Come out of him." The unclean spirit shook the man and screamed, and then it came out. Everyone was shaken and questioned among themselves, "What is this? A new teaching with authority? Even he commands unclean spirits and they obey him." Right away, the news about him spread throughout the entire region of Galilee. This is the word of God. thanks be to God. A demon, huh? We don't often go around our society these days talking about demons, do we? And if you do, you're likely to get some strange looks from other folks around. As I have brought to you many times, particularly this past fall, there's things that we come across in the Bible that often aren't what we think they are. And here's another great example. We often, when we think about a demon or what a demon is, or we hear somebody use that word, we make a demon this literal living being. And in doing so, I would submit to you that we actually take power away from the story. We reduce the meaning of the Word of God in this story to little creatures with horns who can magically fly around and come and inhabit your body. And if the demons of this world are always outside of us, then we never think and stop and look at the way we in our societies have created demons, at the way forces of the world are working within us. We flatten the dynamic meaning of this story of the Word of God. We take the wind out of the sail, so to speak. The word demon in our society has gotten a bit of a bad rap. Today, it's almost always used in terms of an evil being, right? When you hear demon, what do you think about? Sort of dark, ominous figures that hover over something, right? But in the Greek, in the original language of the New Testament, the word demon didn't have that same connotation to it. It didn't have that same innate evil sense in it. In fact, the word is daimon. Sounds pretty similar to the English word, right? Daimon or daimonion. Simply means a spirit. Not good or bad per se. Could be either. In fact, and here's an interesting point, the word for, or at least one of the words in Greek for happiness, is eudaimonion. You can see that demon didn't have the same negative connotation that it does for us today, because if a word that closely related to it means happiness, there's got to be something more going on here than we think. And there is. The word daimonion, didn't carry the sense of a being with a personality and shape or form in the Greek New Testament, but more of something other than human that had a power. And as I've been researching this and digging into it, yeah, this week, but also for years, I find over and over again when researching that there are three things that continue to pop up about this idea of a demon or an evil or unclean spirit. That one, it's not human. Pretty simple. Two, it's not God. Pretty simple too. At least not the God of Israel, not the God of Jesus Christ. Three, it's connected to power. And when we put those three pieces of the definition together, we get something like this. A demon is anything that has power that is not of God. Anything that has power that is not following the way of God, which is made clear through the life and the teaching of Jesus Christ. And when you realize that this is what a demon is, and when you accept this larger dynamic idea, you begin to understand that there are many human-made things that are demons, that are demonic, so to speak. Some examples? Sure. Lies. Lies work like demons. They exert a power over us, both the hearer and the listener. That a power that leads us astray, that pushes us further and further from the truth, whether we're the one speaking it and we get lost up and caught up in that lie, or whether we're the one that's heard that lie and gotten put off our path because someone has told us an untruth. Small little white lies, like telling your spouse you came straight home after work when you know good and well you stopped by Sherry's Bakery. Or if you're like me, the seller, to get a cup of coffee. But also big lies that we tell ourselves. Lies like, I'm not good enough. I'm not smart enough. I'm not capable enough. Lies like, well, if I just say the right thing or do the right thing, I can change that person. Some folks think that way a little too much when they're dating or they're preparing for marriage, that they can change that other person. That's a lie we tell ourselves. Even bigger lies. Lies such as humans are invariably different because of things like hair color or eye color or skin color. Lies such as you hear a lot in the religious community around us, such as women can't preach, they can't be pastors, they should be homemakers, and men are the money makers. Those are all lies that we tell ourselves. Lies are one way that we see demons creep into the world around us, into our thoughts and our minds and our bodies and our souls and our communities and our institutions and our systems. Drugs are another good one. Drugs, human-made in many cases, they function in a sort of demonic way by creating addiction within folks. They exert a power over people that is not of God that would lead you from a whole and healthy life. And if you think about it, there's many things in our world that can become addictive. Habits and work like drugs. It's not just the meth and the crack and the cocaine and the marijuana that exerts that kind of influence. It can be a lot of things. Overeating can function in this way. Anything that we put into our body that becomes something we're addicted to. For some of us, chocolate works this way. I'll be the first to admit it. Hobbies and activities that can suck us into them and lead us out of the real world until we don't even know what time it is or what day it is. And can't pull ourselves back to the real world. There's all sorts of things in our lives that can exert that addicting, drug-like influence over us. Lies, drugs, even ideas and ideologies can be demonic when they lead us to think only of ourselves or to talk bad about other people, no matter who they come from. No matter how right you are, when something leads you to think that you're better than, or that you're right and they're wrong, without seeing and understanding someone, then they become demonic, not of the God who says we should love one another as ourselves. Governments can become demonic when they become corrupt. We hear stories all the time of corruption in governments around the world, when they force people to worship certain ways, when they take more from people than they give, governments can become demonic. Technology, even, can be demonic when it causes harm to human beings. I think I just came across a study this week where it said our Wi-Fi signals, they're starting to realize, are creating negative effects on our bodies, leading to cancers. Wi-Fi. Lord knows we're around Wi-Fi almost every second of every day. It becomes almost scary when you think about it. There's lots of things that can be demonic. I even submit to you that some of the things that we think are the best and the most holy and the most sacred in the world can be demonic. Sometimes pastors and churches can be demonic when they begin exerting power over others that is not in line with the way of Christ, when they take freedoms from people, telling them who they can spend time with, how they should live, what they should wear, how they should dress. Some of us know of faith communities that have done this to folks that we know and love, and some of us have even experienced it for ourselves, exerting a power over our lives that is not in line with the way of God. So demons are lots of things, but they are not beings that magically fly around and go into or out of people. That's a personification of something that is a force in our lives that is not of God. And while thinking that way can be really helpful, and so I want you to hear me say that. We personify things all the time. Car not working so well. Oh, let me go get her and take her to the shop. I've just turned a car into a female. Right? It has its uses. Can show affection in some cases, such as that. Demons are no more creatures with horns and bodies any more than leaves dance in the wind, or that wind whispers to the trees, or when I look up and see the man in the moon. There's no more a man in the moon than there is a demon in my body. All those images help us to picture something in our mind's eye. They help us to give form and substance to something that is real and at work in our culture, in our society, in our bodies, in our minds, in our souls even. But if we can never name those forces for what they are, we'll never be able to overcome them. When folks heard Jesus or read these stories about Jesus, their first question was never, is it real? Is it a personification? Is it a metaphor? Is it a little being with horns that flies around? That wasn't the questions they asked. Those are the questions this day that we ask because we don't always get it. What's important is what demons do, whether literal or metaphorical. They exert a power over us that is not of God, whether lies or drugs or governments or ideologies or pastors or whatever. Demons keep us from our true selves, from our true nature, from our true calling. That is, they keep us from God, from God's way, from living the way of Jesus Christ. And so we have to watch out for demons in our lives. We have to be vigilant about discerning the world around us. We have to find and discover these powers in our lives that would seek to control us. And we have to name them and do something about them. And so here's where I want us to go back to that story and look at the way Jesus handles demons, this evil or unclean spirit in the story. First, Jesus commands it, right? Be quiet. Silence. And then Jesus says, leave the man alone. Jesus silences the voice of this spirit, this demon, this force that's at work in this man's body. And then he speaks power over that spirit, ordering it to release its control over this man. Now pay attention here, because what Jesus does is instructive for us. It's what we must do when forces come into our lives and would seek to control us. We must silence those voices. We must silence the power that would seek to lure us into its grip. We must still the force that is influencing and controlling us. And we must command that power, that force, that spirit to leave us. That's pretty instructive, but saying it is a lot simpler than doing it. Right? How many of you have found yourself trying to do those things and then it creeps right back into your life, that thing you're trying to rid yourself of? How do you silence the things in your life that have power over you? How do you command them? How do you rid yourself of them? Too often, we think we just need the will and the strength to overcome something powerful in our lives, as if we can only rid ourselves of it through the strength of our brute force. Just like I tried to do with Jesse walking him down the street. But life doesn't work that way. The truth is, you can't command something that you don't know or understand. In this story, Jesus isn't effective because he's strong and powerful. I'm not saying he's weak. I'm just saying he's not effective because of his power. He is effective because he has authority. That's what the story says. It starts off with his authority and it ends with his authority. This story is about his authority. And his authority in the story is linked to his teaching. Jesus is a teacher. He's wise. He's knowledgeable. Jesus is one who knows and understands. And because of his understanding, he is able to speak to this force, this power, this spirit, this demon in a compelling way. Some of you know the Russian writer and philosopher Fyodor Dostoevsky. Perhaps you've read some of his writings. On the front of your bulletin, there's something that he wrote or said long ago. While nothing is easier than to denounce the evildoer, nothing is more difficult than to understand him. Dostoevsky is right. It's easy just to try to exert our force over someone or something that we view as evil or wrong or even demonic. But it's much harder to know and understand that force that's at work in your life. To understand the force in our life that's leading us to act or speak or think in a certain way. To understand the person with whom we disagree. To understand the group that we think is wrong or the ideas that we disagree with. It's easy to just call them wrong and evil and bad and even demonic and try to force them to bend to our way or even just dismiss them. but both forcing someone or something and dismissing someone or something means never taking up the true power that is in your life. The true power in your life is the power to have authority over things that would control us. And you gain authority when you understand the forces that are at work in the world around you. You have authority when you know why things work, when you know what makes people tick, when you know the deep reasons a person believes the way they do, when you understand the thoughts and the feelings that lead someone to a particular view or belief that you may not agree with. When you understand someone, something, then you begin to have a power to speak to that person or that thing or that force in your life in a language that it will recognize, in a way that will motivate it to respond to your words, just like Jesus does in the story today. Brothers and sisters, if we want to discover the power in our lives, then we have to be discerning about those powers which are already at work in our lives and our communities. Those powers that separate us from God, we have to begin to separate ourselves from them. You have to get wise and study those forces that are at work. Learn what makes them tick so that you can speak to them with authority. And that is the real power that you have in your life. The power to know. The power to understand. The power to compel. The power to, in a loving way, as Jesus does, silence the world around you, that God might guide your life from here to eternity. May it be so with each of us now.